not, Sacid said. Quan says right here that he doubts that if Alendi reaches the Well of Ascension, he will take the power and then, in the name of the greater good, give it up. Tyndall shook her head. It doesn't make sense, Sacid. Quan wrote several times about how he feared the deepness, but then he tried to foil the hope of stopping it by sending a hateful youth to kill a respected and presumably wise leader. Quan practically set up Rashik to take the power. If letting Alendi take the power was such a concern, wouldn't he have feared that Rashik might do the same? Perhaps we simply see things with the clarity of those regarding events that have already occurred, Sazed said. Tyndall shook her head. We're missing something, Sazed. Quan is a very rational, even deliberate man. One can tell that from his narrative. He was the one who discovered Alendi, and was the first to tout him as the hero of ages. Why would he turn against him as he did? Sazed nodded, flipping through his translation of the rubbing. Quan had gained much notoriety by discovering the hero. He found the place he was looking for. There was a place for me in the lore of the anticipation, the text read. I thought myself the announcer, the prophet foretold to discover the hero of ages. Renouncing Alendi then would have been to renounce my new position, my acceptance by the others. Something dramatic must have happened, Tyndall said. Something that would make him turn against his friend, the source of his own fame. Something that pricked his conscience so sharply that he was willing to risk opposing the most powerful monarch in the land. Something so frightening that he took a ridiculous chance by sending this Rashik on an assassination mission. Sazed leafed through his notes. He fears both the deepness and what would happen if Alendi took the power. Yet he cannot seem to decide which one is the greater threat, and neither seems more present in the narrative than the other. Yes, I can see the problem here. Do you think, perhaps, Quan was trying to imply something by the inconsistency in his own arguments? Perhaps, Tyndall said. The information is just so slim. I cannot judge a man without knowing the context of his life. Sazed looked up, eyeing her. Perhaps we have been studying too hard, he said. Shall we take a break? Tyndall shook her head. We don't have time, Sazed. He met her eyes. She was right on that point. You sense it too, don't you? She asked. He nodded. This city will soon fall. The forces pressing upon it. The armies, the Kolos, the civil confusion. I fear it will be more violent than your friends hope, Sazed, Tyndall said quietly. They seem to believe that they can just continue to juggle their problems. They are an optimistic group, he said with a smile, unaccustomed to being defeated. This will be worse than the revolution, Tyndall said. I have studied these things, Sazed. I know what happens when a conqueror takes a city. People will die. Many people. Sazed felt a chill at her words. There was a tension to Luthadel. War was coming to the city. Perhaps one army or another would enter by the blessing of the assembly, but the other would still strike. The walls of Luthadel would run red when the siege finally ended. And he feared that end was coming very, very soon. You are right, he said, turning back to the notes on his desktop. We must continue to study. We should collect more of what we can find about the land before the ascension, so that you may have the context you seek. She nodded, showing a fatalistic resolve. This was not a task they could complete in the time they had. Deciphering the meaning of the rubbing, comparing it to the logbook, and relating it to the context of the period, was a scholarly undertaking that would require the determined work of years. Keepers had much knowledge, but in this case, it was almost too much. They had been gathering and transmitting records, stories, myths, and legends for so long that it took years for one keeper to recite the collected works to a new initiate. Fortunately, included with the mass of information were indexes and summaries created by the keepers. On top of this came the notes and personal indexes each individual keeper made. And yet those only helped the keeper understand just how much information he had. Sazed himself had spent his life reading, memorizing, and indexing religions. Each night before he slept, he read some portion of a note or story. He was probably the world's foremost scholar on pre-ascension religions, and yet he felt as if he knew so little. Compounding all of that was the inherent unreliability of their information. A great deal of it came from the mouths of simple people, doing their best to remember what their lives had once been like, or more often what the lives of their grandparents had once been like. The keepers hadn't been founded until late in the 2nd century of the Lord Ruler's reign. By then, many religions had already been wiped out in their pure forms. Sazed closed his eyes, dumped another index from a copper mine into his head, then began to search it. There wasn't much time, true, but Tyndall and he were keepers. They were accustomed to beginning tasks that others would have to finish. Elend Venture, once king of the Central Dominance, stood on the balcony of his keep overlooking the vast city of Luthadel. Though the first snows had yet to fall, the weather had grown cold. He wore an overcloak, tied at the front, but it didn't protect his face. A chill tingled his cheeks as a wind blew across him, whipping at his cloak. Smoke rose from chimneys, gathering like an ominous shadow above the city before rising up to meld with the ashen red sky. For every house that produced smoke, there were two that did not. Many of those were probably deserted. The city held nowhere near the population it once had. However, he knew that many of those smokeless houses were still inhabited. Inhabited and freezing. "I should have been able to do more for them," Elend thought, eyes open to the piercing cold wind. "I should have found a way to get more coal. I should have managed to provide for them all." It was humbling, even depressing, to admit that the Lord Ruler had done better than Elend himself. Despite being a heartless tyrant, the Lord Ruler had at least kept a significant portion of the population from starving or freezing. He had kept armies in check, and had kept crime at a manageable level. To the northeast, the Kolos army waited. It had sent no emissaries to the city, but it was more frightening than either Set's or Straff's armies. The cold wouldn't scare away its occupants. Despite their bare skin, they apparently took little notice of weather changes. This final army was the most disturbing of the three, more dangerous, more unpredictable, and impossible to deal with. Kolos did not bargain. "We haven't been paying enough attention to that threat," he thought as he stood on the balcony. "There's just been so much to do, so much to worry about, that we couldn't focus on an army that might be as dangerous to our enemies as it is to us." It was looking less and less likely that the Kolos would attack Set or Straff. Apparently Jastes was enough in control to keep them waiting to take a shot at Luthadel itself.
"Milord," said a voice from behind. "Please come back in. That's a fair wind. No use killing yourself from a chill."
Elend turned back. Captain Demu stood dutifully in the room, along with another bodyguard. In the aftermath of the assassination attempt, Ham had insisted that Elend go about guarded. Elend hadn't complained, though he knew there was little reason for caution anymore. Straff wouldn't want to kill him now that he wasn't king.
"So earnest," Elend thought, studying Dumu's face. "Why do I find him youthful? We're nearly the same age."
"Very well," Elend said, turning and striding into the room. As Dumu closed the balcony doors, Elend removed his cloak. The suit below felt wrong on him. Sloppy, even though he had ordered it cleaned and pressed. The vest was too tight. His practice with the sword was slowly modifying his body, while the coat hung loosely.
"Demu," Elend said, "when is your next survivor rally?"
"Tonight, my lord."
Elend nodded. He'd feared that.
It would be a cold night.
My lord, Demu said, do you still intend to come?
Of course, Ellen said. I gave my word that I would join with your cause.
That was before you lost the vote, my lord.
That is immaterial, Ellen said. I am joining your movement because it is important to the Ska, Demu, and I want to understand the will of my... of the people. I promised you dedication, and you shall have it.
Demu seemed a bit confused, but spoke no further. Ellen eyed his desk, considering some studying, but found it hard to motivate himself in the chill room. Instead, he pushed open the door and strode out into the hallway. His guards followed. He stopped himself from turning toward Vin's rooms. She needed her rest, and it didn't do her much good to have him peeking in every half hour to check on her. So instead, he turned to wander down a different passageway. The back hallways of Keep Venture were tight, dark stone constructions of labyrinthine complexity. Perhaps it was because he'd grown up in these passages, but he felt at home in their dark, secluded confines. They had been the perfect place for a young man who didn't really care to be found. Now he used them for another reason. The corridors provided a perfect place for extended walking. He didn't point himself in any particular direction, he just moved, working out his frustration to the beating of his own footsteps. I can't fix the city's problems, he told himself. I have to let Penrod handle that. He's the one the people want. That should have made things easier for Elland. It let him focus on his own survival, not to mention let him spend more time revitalizing his relationship with Vin. She, however, seemed different lately. Elland tried to tell himself it was just her injury, but he sensed something deeper. Something in the way she looked at him, something in the way she reacted to his affection. And despite himself, he could think of only one thing that had changed. He was no longer king. Vin was not shallow. She had shown him nothing but devotion and love during their 2 years together. And yet how could she not react, even if unconsciously, to his colossal failure? During the assassination attempt, he had watched her fight. Really watched her fight for the first time. Until that day, he hadn't realized just how amazing she was. She wasn't just a warrior, and she wasn't just an allomancer. She was a force, like thunder or wind. The way she had killed that last man, smashing his head with her own. How could she love a man like me, he thought. I couldn't even hold my throne. I wrote the very laws that deposed me. He sighed, continuing to walk. He felt like he should be scrambling, trying to figure out a way to convince Vin that he was worthy of her. But that would just make him seem more incompetent. There was no correcting past mistakes, especially since he could see no real mistakes he had made. He had done the best he could, and that had proven insufficient. He paused at an intersection. Once, a relaxing dip into a book would have been enough to calm him. Now he felt nervous, tense, a little like he assumed Vin usually felt. Maybe I could learn from her, he thought. What would Vin do in my situation? She certainly wouldn't just wander around brooding and feeling sorry for herself. Ellen frowned, looking down at a hallway lighted by flickering oil lamps, only half of them lit. Then he took off, walking with a determined stride toward a particular set of rooms. He knocked quietly and got no response. Finally, he poked his head in. Sazed and Tyndall sat quietly before a desk piled high with scraps of paper and ledgers. They both sat staring, as if at nothing, their eyes bearing the glazed over look of someone who had been stunned. Sazed's hand rested on the table, Tyndall's rested on top of it. Sazed shook himself alert suddenly, turning to regard Elland.
Lord Venture! I am sorry, I did not hear you enter.
It's all right, Saze, Elland said, walking into the room. As he did, Tyndall shook awake as well, and she removed her hand from Sazed's. Elland nodded to Demu and his companion, who were still following, indicating that they should remain outside, then closed the door.
Elland, Tyndall said, her voice laced with its typical undercurrent of displeasure.
What is your purpose in bothering us? You have already proven your incompetence quite soundly. I see no need for further discussion.
This is still my home, Tyndall, Elland replied. Insult me again, and you will find yourself ejected from the premises.
Tyndall raised an eyebrow. Sazed paled.
Lord Venture, he said quickly, I don't think that Tyndall meant to...
It's all right, Sazed, Elland said, raising a hand. She was just testing to see if I had reverted back to my previous state of insultability.
Tyndall shrugged.
I have heard reports of your moping through the palace hallways like a lost child.
Those reports are true, Elland said, but that doesn't mean that my pride is completely gone.
Good, Tyndall said, nodding to a chair. Seat yourself, if you wish.
Elland nodded, pulling the chair over before the two and sitting. I need advice.
I've given you what I can already, Tyndall said. In fact, I've perhaps given you too much. My continued presence here makes it seem that I'm taking sides.
I'm not king anymore, Elland said. Therefore, I have no side. I'm just a man seeking truth.
Tyndall smiled.
Ask your questions, then.
Sazed watched the exchange with obvious interest.
I know, Elland thought. I'm not sure I understand our relationship either.
Here is my problem, he said. I lost the throne, essentially, because I wasn't willing to lie.
Explain, Tyndall said.
I had a chance to obscure a piece of law, Elland said. At the last moment, I could have made the Assembly take me as king. Instead, I gave them a bit of information that was true, but which ended up costing me the throne.
I'm not surprised, Tyndall said.
I doubted that you would be, Elland said. Now, do you think I was foolish to do as I did?
Yes.
Elland nodded.
But, Tyndall said, that moment isn't what cost you the throne, Elland Venture. That moment was a small thing, far too simple to credit with your large-scale failure. You lost the throne because you wouldn't command your armies to secure the city, because you insisted on giving the Assembly too much freedom, and because you don't employ assassins or other forms of pressure. In short, Elland Venture, you lost the throne because you are a good man.
Elland shook his head.
Can you not be both a good man who follows his conscience and a good king, then?
Tyndall frowned in thought.
You ask an age-old question, Elland, Sazed said quietly. A question that monarchs, priests, and humble men of destiny have always asked. I do not know that there is an answer.
Should I have told the lie, Sazed? Elland asked.
No, Sazed said, smiling. Perhaps another man should have, in your same position. But a man must be cohesive with himself. You have made your decisions in life, and changing yourself at the last moment, telling this lie, would have been against who you are. It is better for you to have done as you did, and lost the throne, I think.
Tyndall frowned.
His ideals are nice, Sazed, but what of the people? What if they die because Elland wasn't capable of controlling his own conscience? I do not wish to argue with you, Tyndall, Sazed said. It is simply my opinion that he chose well. It is his right to follow his conscience, then trust in Providence to fill in the holes caused by the conflict between morality and logic.
Providence? You mean God, Elland said.
I do.
Elland shook his head.
What is God, Sazed, but a device used by obligators?
Why do you make the choices that you do, Elland Venture?
Because they're right, Elland said.
And why are these things right?
I don't know, Elland said with a sigh, leaning back.
He caught a disapproving glance from Tyndall at his posture, but he ignored her. He wasn't king. He could slouch if he wanted to.
You talk of God, Sazed, but don't you preach of 100 different religions?
300, actually, Sazed said.
Well, which one do you believe? Elend asked.
I believe them all.
Elend shook his head. That doesn't make sense. You've only pitched a half dozen to me, but I can already see that they're incompatible.
It is not my position to judge truth, Lord Venture, Sazed said, smiling. I simply carry it.
Elend sighed. Priests, he thought. Sometimes talking to Sazed is like talking to an obligator.
Elend, Tyndall said, her tone softening. I think you handled this situation in the wrong way. However, Sazed does have a point. You were true to your own convictions, and that is a regal attribute, I think.
And what should I do now? He asked.
Whatever you wish, Tyndall said. It was never my place to tell you what to do. I simply gave you knowledge of what men in your place did in the past.
And what would they have done? Elend asked. These great leaders of yours. How would they have reacted to my situation?
It is a meaningless question, she said. They would not have found themselves in this situation, for they would not have lost their titles in the first place.
Is that what it's about, then? Elend asked. The title?
Isn't that what we were discussing? Tyndall asked.
Elend didn't answer. What do you think makes a man a good king? He had once asked of Tyndall.
Trust, she had replied.
A good king is one who is trusted by his people, and one who deserves that trust. Elend stood up.
Thank you, Tyndall, he said.
Tyndall frowned in confusion, then turned to Sazed. He looked up and met Ellen's eyes, cocking his head slightly. Then he smiled.
Come, Tyndall, he said. We should return to our studies. His Majesty has work to do, I think.
Tyndall continued to frown as Elend left the room. His guards followed behind as he quickly strode down the hallway.
I won't go back the way I was, Elend thought. I won't continue to fret and worry. Tyndall taught me better than that, even if she never really understood me.
Elend arrived at his rooms a few moments later. He stalked directly in, then opened his closet. The clothing Tyndall had chosen for him, the clothing of a king, waited inside.
Some of you may know of my fabled memory. It is true. I need not a ferrochemist's metal mind to memorize a sheet of words in an instant.
42. Good, Elend said, using a charcoal stick to circle another section of the city map before him. What about here?
Demus scratched his chin.
Grenfield? That's a nobleman's neighborhood, my lord.
It used to be, Elend said. Grenfield was filled with cousin houses to the Ventures. When my father pulled out of the city, so did most of them.
Then we'd probably find the homes filled with Scartransians, I'd guess.
Elend nodded. Move them out.
Excuse me, my lord, Demus said.
The two stood in Keep Venture's large carriage landing. Soldiers moved in a bustle through the spacious room. Many of them didn't wear uniforms. They weren't on official city business. Elend was no longer king, but they still had come at his request. That said something, at least.
We need to move the Ska out of those homes, Elend continued. Noblemen's houses are mostly stone mansions with a lot of small rooms. They're extremely hard to heat, requiring a separate hearth or a stove for every room. The Ska tenements are depressing, but they have massive hearths and open rooms.
Demu nodded slowly.
The Lord Ruler couldn't have his workers freezing, Elend said. Those tenements are the best way to efficiently look after a large population of people with limited resources.
I understand, my lord, Demu said.
Don't force them, Demu, Elend said. My personal guard, even augmented with army volunteers, has no official authority in the city. If a family wants to stay in their pilfered aristocratic house, let them. Just make certain that they know there's an alternative to freezing.
Demu nodded,
then moved over to pass on the commands. Ellen turned as a messenger arrived. The man had to weave his way through an organized jumble of soldiers receiving orders and making plans. Ellen nodded to the newcomer.
"You're on the demolitions scout group, correct?"
The man nodded as he bowed. He wasn't in uniform. He was a soldier, not one of Ellen's guards. He was a younger man with a square jaw, balding head, and honest smile.
"Don't I know you?" Ellen said. "I helped you a year ago, my lord," the man said. "I led you into the Lord Ruler's palace to help rescue Lady Vin." "Goradel," Ellen said, remembering. "You used to be in the Lord Ruler's personal guard."
The man nodded.
"I joined up in your army after that day. Seemed like the thing to do."
Ellen smiled.
"Not my army anymore, Goradel, but I do appreciate your coming to help us today. What's your report?"
"You were right, my lord," Goradel said. "The Skav already robbed the empty homes for furniture. But not many thought of the walls. A good half of the abandoned mansions have wooden walls on the inside, and a lot of the tenements were made of wood. Most all of them have wooden roofs."
"Good," Ellen said.
He surveyed the gathering mass of men. He hadn't told them his plans. He'd simply asked for volunteers to help him with some manual labor. He hadn't expected the response to number in the hundreds.
"It looks like we're gathering quite a group, my lord,"
Demus said, rejoining Ellen. Ellen nodded, giving leave for Goradel to withdraw.
"We'll be able to try an even more ambitious project than I'd planned."
"My lord," Demus said, "are you certain you want to start tearing the city down around ourselves?"
"We either lose buildings or we lose people, Demu," Ellen said. "The buildings go."
"And if the king tries to stop us?"
"Then we obey," Ellen said. "But I don't think Lord Penrod will object. He's too busy trying to get a bill through the assembly that hands the city over to my father. Besides, it's probably better for him to have these men here, working, than it is to have them sitting and worrying in the barracks."
Demu fell silent. Ellen did as well. Both knew how precarious their position was. Only a short time had passed since the assassination attempt and the transfer of power, and the city was in shock. Set was still holed up inside of Keep Hasting, and his armies had moved into position to attack the city. Luthadel was like a man with a knife pressed very closely to his throat. Each breath cut the skin.
"I can't do much about that now," Ellen thought. "I have to make certain the people don't freeze these next few nights."
He could feel the bitter cold, despite the daylight, his cloak and the shelter. There were a lot of people in Luthadel, but if he could get enough men tearing down enough buildings, he just might be able to do some good.
"My lord!"
Ellen turned as a short man with a drooping mustache approached.
"Ah, Felt," he said. "You have news?"
The man was working on the poisoned food problem, specifically how the city was being breached. The scout nodded.
"I do indeed, my lord. We interrogated the refugees with a rioter, and we came up dry. Then, however, I started thinking. The refugees seemed too obvious to me. Strangers in the city? Of course they'd be the first ones we'd suspect. I figured with how much has been going wrong with the wells and the food and the like, someone has to be sneaking in and out of the city."
Ellen nodded. They'd been watching Set's soldiers inside Keep Hasting very carefully, and none of them was responsible. Straff's Mistborn was still a possibility, but Vin had never believed that he was behind the poisoning. Ellen hoped that the trail, if it could be found, would lead back to someone in his own palace, hopefully revealing who on his serving staff had been replaced by a Chandra.
"Well?" Ellen asked.
"I interrogated the people who run pass walls," Felt continued. "I don't think they're to blame."
"Pass walls?"
Felt nodded.
"Covert passages out of the city. Tunnels or the like."
"Such things exist?" Ellen asked with surprise.
"Of course, my lord," Felt said. "Moving between cities was very difficult for Ska thieves during the Lord Ruler's reign. Everyone who entered Luthadel was subject to interview and interrogation. So ways to get into the city covertly were very prevalent.
Most of those have shut down, the ones who used to lower people up and down by ropes or over the walls. A few are still running, but I don't think they are letting the spies in. Once that first well was poisoned, the pass walls all got paranoid that you'd come after them. Since then, they've only been letting people out of the city. Ones who want to run from the besieged city and the like.
Ellen frowned. He wasn't certain what he thought of the fact that people were disobeying his order that the gates be shut with no passage out.
Next, Felt said, I tried the river.
We thought of that, Ellen said. The grates covering the water are all secure.
Felt smiled. That they are. I sent some men down under the water to search about, and we found several locks down below, keeping the river grates in place.
What?
Someone pried the gates free, my lord, Felt said, then locked them back into place so it wouldn't look suspicious. That way they could swim in and out at their leisure.
Ellen raised an eyebrow.
You want us to replace the grates? Felt asked.
No, Ellen said.
No, just replace those locks with new ones. Then post men to watch. Next time those prisoners try and get into the city, I want them to find themselves trapped.
Felt nodded, retreating with a happy smile on his face. His talents as a spy hadn't been put to much good use lately, and he seemed to be enjoying the tasks Ellen was giving him. Ellen made a mental note to think about putting Felt to work on locating the Chandra spy, assuming, of course, that Felt himself wasn't the spy.
Milord, Demus said, approaching, I think I might be able to offer a second opinion on how the poisonings are occurring.
Ellen turned. Oh? Demu nodded, waving for a man to approach from the side of the room. He was younger, perhaps 18, and had the dirty face and clothing of a ska worker.
This is Larn, Demu said, a member of my congregation.
The young man bowed to Ellen, posture nervous.
You may speak, Larn, Demu said. Tell Lord Venture what you saw.
Well, my lord, the young man said, I tried to go tell this to the king. The new king, I mean.
He flushed, embarrassed.
It's all right, Ellen said. Continue.
Well, the men there turned me away. Said the king didn't have time for me. So I came to Lord Demu. I figured he might believe me.
About what? Ellen asked.
Inquisitor, my lord, the man said quietly. I saw one in the city.
Ellen felt a chill.
You're sure?
The young man nodded.
I've lived in Luthadel all my life, my lord. Watched executions a number of times. I'd recognize one of those monsters, sure I would. I saw him. Spikes through the eyes, tall and robed, slinking about at night. Near the center squares of the city, I promise you.
Ellen shared a look with Demu.
He's not the only one, my lord, Demu said quietly. Some other members of my congregation claim to have seen an inquisitor hanging around Creedic Shaw. I dismissed the first few, but Larn, he's trustworthy. If he said he saw something, he did. Eyes nearly as good as a tin-eye, that one.
Ellen nodded slowly and ordered a patrol from his personal guard to keep watch in the area indicated. After that, he turned his attention back to the wood-gathering effort. He gave the orders, organizing the men into teams, sending some to begin working, others to gather recruits. Without fuel, many of the city's forges had shut down, and the workers were idle. They could use something to occupy their time. Ellen saw energy in the men's eyes as they began to split up. Ellen knew that determination, that firmness of eye and arm. It came from the satisfaction of doing something, of not just sitting around and waiting for fate, or kings, to act. Ellen turned back to the map, making a few notations. From the corner of his eye, he saw Ham saunter in.
"So this is where they all went," Ham said. "The sparring grounds are empty."
Ellen looked up, smiling.
"You're back to the uniform, then?" Ham asked.
Ellen glanced down at his white outfit. designed to stand out, to set him apart from a city stained by ash.
Yes. Too bad, Ham said with a sigh. Nobody should have to wear a uniform.
Elland raised an eyebrow. In the face of undeniable winter, Ham had finally taken to wearing a shirt beneath his vest. He wore no cloak or coat, however. Elland turned back to the map.
The clothing suits me, he said. It just feels right. Anyway, that vest of yours is as much a uniform as this is.
No, it's not.
Oh? Elland asked. Nothing screams thug like a man who goes about in the winter without a coat, Ham. You've used your clothing to change how people react to you, to let them know who you are and what you represent, which is essentially what a uniform does.
Ham paused.
That's an interesting way of looking at it.
What? Elland said. You never argued about something like this with Breeze? Ham shook his head as he turned to look over the groups of men, listening to the men Elland had appointed to give orders.
He's changed, Elland thought. Running this city, dealing with all of this, it's even changed him.
The thug was more solemn now, more focused. Of course, he had even more stake in the city's safety than the rest of the crew. It was sometimes hard to remember that the free-spirited thug was a family man. Ham tended to not talk much about Mardro or his two children. Elland suspected it was habit. Ham had spent much of his marriage living apart from his family in order to keep them safe.
This whole city is my family, Elland thought, watching the soldiers leave to do their work. Some might have thought something as simple as gathering firewood to be a mundane task, of little relevance in a city threatened by three armies. However, Elland knew that the freezing Ska people would receive the fuel with as much appreciation as they would salvation from the armies. The truth was that Elland felt a little like his soldiers did. He felt a satisfaction, a thrill even, from doing something, anything, to help.
"What if Set's attack comes?" Ham said, still looking over the soldiers. "A good portion of the army will be out scattered through the city.
Even if we have 1,000 men in my teams, that's not much of a dent in our forces. Besides, Clubs thinks there will be plenty of time to gather them. We've got messengers set up."
Elland looked back at his map.
"Anyway, I don't think Set's going to attack just yet. He's pretty safe in that keep there. We'll never take him. We'd have to pull too many men away from the city defenses, leaving ourselves exposed. The only thing he really has to worry about is my father."
Elland trailed off.
"What?"
Ham said. "That's why Set is here," Elland said, blinking in surprise.
"Don't you see? He intentionally left himself without options. If Straff attacks, Set's armies will end up fighting alongside our own. He's locked in his fate with ours."
Ham frowned.
"Seems like a pretty desperate move."
Elland nodded, thinking back to his meeting with Set.
"Desperate," he said. "That's a good word. Set is desperate for some reason, one I haven't been able to figure out. Anyway, by putting himself in here, he sides with us against Straff, whether we want the alliance or not."
"But what if the Assembly gives the city to Straff? If our men join with him in attack Set?"
"That's the gamble he took," Elland said. "Set never intended to be able to walk away from the confrontation here in Luthadel. He intends to take the city or be destroyed. He is waiting, hoping Straff will attack, worrying that we'll just give in to him. But neither can happen as long as Straff is afraid of Vin. A three-way standoff, with the Koloss as a fourth element that nobody can predict."
Someone needed to do something to tip the scales.
"Damu," Elland said. "Are you ready to take over here?"
Captain Damu looked over, nodding. Elland turned to Ham.
"I have a question for you, Ham." Ham raised an eyebrow. "How insane are you feeling at the moment?"
Elland led his horse out of the tunnel into the scraggly landscape outside of Luthadel. He turned, craning to look up at the wall. Hopefully the soldiers there had gotten his message,
and wouldn't mistake him for a spy or a scout of one of the enemy armies. He'd rather not end up in Tyndall's histories as the ex-king who died by an arrow from one of his own men. Ham led a small grizzled woman from the tunnel. As Elland had guessed, Ham had easily found a suitable pass wall to get them out of the city.
"Well, there you go," said the elderly woman, resting on her cane.
"Thank you, good woman," Elland said. "You have served your dominance well this day." The woman snorted, raising an eyebrow, though from what Elland could tell, she was quite nearly blind. Elland smiled, pulling out a pouch and handing it to her. She reached into it with gnarled but surprisingly dexterous fingers and counted out the contents.
3 extra.
"To pay you to leave a scout here," Elland said, "to watch for our return."
"Return?" the woman asked. "You aren't running?"
"No," Elland said. "I just have some business with one of the armies." The woman raised the eyebrow again.
"Well, none of Granny's business," she muttered, turning back down the hole with a tapping cane. "For 3 clips I can find a grandson to sit out here for a few hours. Lord Ruler knows I have enough of them."
Ham watched her go, a spark of fondness in his eyes. "How long have you known about this place?" Elland asked, watching as a couple of burly men pulled close the hidden section of stone. Half burrowed, half cut from the wall's stones themselves, the tunnel was a remarkable feat. Even after hearing about the existence of such things from Felt earlier, it was still a shock to travel through one hidden not a few minutes' ride from Keep Venture itself. Ham turned back to him as the false wall snapped shut.
"Oh, I've known of this for years and years," he said. "Granny Hild used to give me sweets when I was a kid. Of course, that was really just a cheap way of getting some quiet yet well-targeted publicity for her pass wall. When I was grown, I used to use this to sneak Mardra and the kids in and out of the city when they came to visit."
"Wait," Elland said. "You grew up in Luthadel?"
"Of course."
"On the streets, like Vin?" Ham shook his head.
"Not really like Vin," he said in a subdued voice, scanning the wall. "I don't really think anyone grew up like Vin. I had Ska parents. My grandfather was the nobleman. I was involved with the underground, but I had my parents for a good portion of my childhood. Besides, I was a boy, and a large one." He turned toward Elland. "I suspect that makes a big difference."
Elland nodded.
"You're not going to shut this place down, are you?" Ham asked.
Elland turned with shock. "Why would I?" Ham shrugged.
"It doesn't exactly seem like the kind of honest enterprise that you would approve of. There are probably people fleeing from the city nightly through this hole. Granny Hild is known to take coin and not ask questions, even if she does grumble at you a bit."
Ham did have a point. "Probably he didn't tell me about the place until I specifically asked." His friends walked a fine line, close to their old ties with the underground, yet working hard to build up the government they'd sacrificed so much to create.
"I'm not king," Elland said, leading his horse away from the city. "What Granny Hild does isn't any of my business."
Ham moved up beside him, looking relieved. Elland could see that relief dissipate, however, as the reality of what they were doing settled in.
"I don't like this, El."
They stopped walking as Elland mounted.
"Neither do I."
Ham took a deep breath, then nodded.
"My old nobleman friends would have tried to talk me out of this," Elland thought with amusement. "Why did I surround myself with people who had been loyal to the survivor? They expect their leaders to take irrational risks."
"I'll go with you," Ham said.
"No," Elland said. "It won't make a difference. Stay here, wait to see if I get back. If I don't, tell Vin what happened."
"Sure, I'll tell her," Ham said wryly. Then I'll proceed to remove her daggers from my chest. Just make sure you come back, all right?
Ellen nodded, barely paying attention. His eyes were focused on the army in the distance. An army without tents, carriages, food carts, or servants. An army who had eaten the foliage to the ground in a wide swath around them. Kolos. Sweat made the reins slick in Ellen's hands. This was different from before, when he'd gone into Straff's army in Set's keep. This time he was alone. Vin couldn't get him out if things went bad. She was still recovering from her wounds, and nobody knew what Ellen was doing but Ham. "What do I owe the people of this city?" Ellen thought. "They rejected me. Why do I insist on trying to protect them?"
"I recognize that look, El," Ham said. "Let's go back."
Ellen closed his eyes, letting out a quiet sigh. Then he snapped his eyes open and kicked his horse into a gallop. It had been years since he'd seen Kolos, and that experience had come only at his father's insistence. Straff hadn't trusted the creatures, and had never liked having garrisons of them in the northern dominance, one just a few days' march from his home city of Urto. Those Kolos had been a reminder, a warning, from the Lord Ruler. Elland rode his horse hard, as if using its momentum to bolster his own will. Aside from one brief visit to the Urto Kolos garrison, everything he knew of the creatures came from books. But Tyndall's instruction had weakened his once absolute and slightly naive trust in his learning. "It will have to be enough," Elland thought as he approached the camp. He gritted his teeth, slowing his animal as he approached a wandering squad of Kolos. It was as he remembered. One large creature, its skin revoltingly split and cracked by stretch marks, led a few medium-sized beasts, whose bleeding rips were only beginning to appear at the corners of their mouths and the edges of their eyes. A smattering of smaller creatures, their baggy skin loose and sagging beneath their eyes and arms, accompanied their betters. Elland reined in his horse, trotting it over to the largest beast.
"Take me to Jastis."
"Get off your horse," the Kolos said.
Elland looked the creature directly in the eyes. Atop his horse, he was nearly the same height.
"Take me to Jastis."
The Kolos regarded him with a set of beady, unreadable eyes. It bore a rip from one eye to the other above the nose, a secondary rip curving down to one of the nostrils. The nose itself was pulled so tight it was twisted and flattened, held to the bone a few inches off center. This was the moment. The books said the creature would either do as commanded or simply attack him. Ellen sat tensely.
"Come," the Kolos snapped, turning to walk back toward the camp.
The rest of the creatures surrounded Ellen's horse, and the beast shuffled nervously. Ellen kept a tight hold on his reins and nudged the animal forward. It responded skittishly. He should have felt good at his small victory, but his tension only increased. They moved forward into the Kolos camp. It was like being swallowed, like letting a rock slide collapse around you. Kolos looked up as he passed, watching him with their red, emotionless eyes. Many others just stood silently around their cooking fires, unresponsive, like men who had been born dull-minded and witless. Others fought. They killed each other, wrestling on the ground before their uncaring companions. No philosopher, scientist, or scholar had been able to determine exactly what set off a Kolos. Greed seemed a good motivation, yet they would sometimes attack when there was plenty of food, killing a companion for his hunk of beef. Pain was another good motivator, apparently, as was a challenge to authority. Carnal, visceral reasons. And yet there seemed to be times when they attacked without any cause or reason. And after fighting, they would explain themselves in calm tones as if their actions were perfectly rational. Ellen shivered as he heard yells, telling himself that he would probably be all right until he reached Jastis. Kolos usually just attacked each other. unless they got into a blood frenzy. He pushed that thought away, instead focusing on the things that Sazed had mentioned about his trip into the Kolos camp. The creatures wore the wide, brutish iron swords that Sazed had described. The bigger the Kolos, the bigger the weapon. When a Kolos reached a size where he thought he needed a larger sword, he had only two choices. Find one that had been discarded, or kill someone and take theirs. A Kolos population could often be crudely controlled by increasing or decreasing the number of swords available to the group. None of the scholars knew how the creatures bred. As Sazed had explained, these Kolos also had strange little pouches tied to their sword straps. What are they? Elend thought. Sazed said he saw the largest Kolos carrying 3 or 4, but that one leading my group has almost 20. Even the small Kolos in Ellen's group had 3 pouches. That's the difference, he thought. Whatever is in those pouches, could it be the way Jastis controls the creatures? There was no way to know, save begging one of the pouches off a Kolos, and he doubted they would let them go. As he walked, he noticed another oddity. Some of the Kolos were wearing clothing. Before, he'd seen them only in loincloths, as Sazed had reported. Yet many of these Kolos had pants, shirts, or skirts pulled onto their bodies. They wore the clothing without regard for size, and most pieces were so tight they had torn. Others were so loose they had to be tied on. Elend saw a few of the larger Kolos wearing garments like bandanas tied around their arms or heads.
"We are not Kolos," the lead Kolos suddenly said, turning to Elend as they walked.
Elend frowned. "Explain."
"You think we are Kolos," it said through lips that were stretched too tightly to work properly. "We are humans. We will live in your city. We will kill you, and we will take it."
Elend shivered, realizing the source of the mismatched garments. They had come from the village that the Kolos had attacked, the one whose refugees had trickled into Luthadel. This appeared to be a new development in Kolos thinking. Or had it always been there, repressed by the Lord Ruler? The scholar in Elend was fascinated. The rest of him was simply horrified. His Kolos guide paused before a small group of tents, the only such structures in the camp. Then the lead Kolos turned and yelled, startling Elend's horse. Elend fought to keep his mount from throwing him, as the Kolos jumped and attacked one of its companions, proceeding to pummel it with a massive fist. Elend won his struggle. The lead Kolos, however, did not. Elend climbed off his horse, patting the beast on the neck as the victimized Kolos pulled his sword from the chest of his former leader. The survivor, who now bore several cuts in his skin that hadn't come from stretching, bent down to harvest the pouches tied to the corpse's back. Elend watched with a muted fascination as the Kolos stood and spoke.
"He was never a good leader," it said in a slurred voice.
"I can't let these monsters attack my city," Elend thought. "I have to do something." He pulled his horse forward, turning his back on the Kolos as he entered the secluded section of camp, watched over by a group of nervous young men in uniforms. Elend handed his reins to one of them. "Take care of this for me," Elend said, striding forward. "Wait," one of the soldiers said. "Halt!" Elend turned sharply, facing the shorter man, who was trying to both level his spear at Elend and keep an eye on the Kolos. Elend didn't try to be harsh. He just wanted to keep his own anxiety under control and keep moving. Either way, the resulting glare probably would have impressed even Tyndall. The soldier jerked to a halt. "I am Elend Venture," Elend said. "You know that name?" The man nodded. "You may announce me to Lord Li Cao," Elend said. "Just get to the tent before I do." The young man took off at a dash. Elend followed, striding up to the tent, where other soldiers stood hesitantly. What must it have done to them, Elend wondered, living surrounded by Kolos, so terribly outnumbered. Feeling a stab of pity, he didn't try to bully his way in. He stood with a faux patience until a voice called from inside.
"Let him in."
Elend brushed past the guards and threw open the tent flap. The months had not been kind to Jastis Lekal. Somehow, the few wisps of hair on his head looked far more pathetic than complete baldness would have. His suit was sloppy and stained, his eyes underlined by a pair of deep bags. He was pacing, and jumped slightly when Elend entered. Then he froze for a moment, eyes wide. Finally, he raised a quivering hand to push back hair he didn't have.
"Elend?" he asked. "What in the Lord Ruler's name happened to you?"
"Responsibility, Jastis," Elend said quietly. "It appears that neither of us were ready for it."
"Out!"
Jastis said, waving to his guards. They shuffled past Elend, closing the tent flap behind them.
"It's been a while, Elend," Jastis said, chuckling weakly.
Elend nodded.
"I remember those days," Jastis said, "sitting in your den or mine, sharing a drink with Teldon. We were so innocent, weren't we?"
"Innocent," Elend said, "but hopeful."
"Want something to drink?" Jastis said, turning toward the room's desk.
Elend eyed the bottles and flasks lying in the corner of the room. They were all empty. Jastis removed a full bottle from the desk and poured Elend a small cup, the size and clear color an indication that this was no simple dinner wine. Elend accepted the small cup, but did not drink.
"What happened, Jastis? How did the clever, thoughtful philosopher I knew turn into a tyrant?"
"Tyrant!" Jastis snapped, downing his cup in a single shot.
"I'm no tyrant. Your father's the tyrant. I'm just a realist."
"Sitting at the center of a Kolos army doesn't seem to be a very realistic position to me."
"I can control them."
"And Suisna?" Elend asked. "The village they slaughtered?" Jastis wavered.
"That was an unfortunate accident."
Elend looked down at the drink in his hand, then threw it aside, the liquor splashing on the dusty tent floor.
"This isn't my father's den, and we are not friends any longer. I will call no man friend who leads something like this against my city." "What happened to your honor, Jastis Lekal?"
Jastis snorted, glancing at the spilled liquor.
"That's always been the problem with you, Elend. So certain, so optimistic, so self-righteous."
"It was our optimism," Elend said, stepping forward.
"We wanted to change things, Jastis, not destroy them."
"Is that so?" Jastis countered, showing a temper Elend had never seen in his friend.
"You want to know why I'm here, Elend? Did you even pay attention to what was happening in the Southern Dominance while you played in Luthadel?"
"I'm sorry about what happened to your family, Jastis."
"Sorry," Jastis said, snatching the bottle off his desk. "You're sorry?" "I implemented your plans, Elend. I did everything we talked about. Freedom. Political honesty. I trusted my allies rather than crushing them into submission. And you know what happened?"
Elend closed his eyes.
"They killed everyone, Elend," Jastis said. "That's what you do when you take over. You kill your rivals and their families. Even the young girls. Even the babies. And you leave their bodies as a warning. That's good politics. That's how you stay in power."
"It's easy to believe in something when you win all the time, Jastis," Elend said, opening his eyes. "The losses are what define a man's faith."
"Losses?" Jastis demanded. "My sister was a loss?"
"No, I mean..."
"Enough!"
Jastis snapped, slamming the bottle down on his desk.
Guards!
Two men threw back the tent flap and moved into the room.
Take His Majesty captive, Jastis said, with an unsteady wave of his hand. Send a messenger to the city. Tell them that we want to negotiate.
I'm not king anymore, Jastis, Elend said. Jastis stopped. Do you think I'd come here and let myself get captured if I were king? Elend asked.
They deposed me. The assembly invoked a no-confidence clause and chose a new king.
You bloody idiot, Jastis said.
Losses, Jastis, Elend said. It hasn't been as hard for me as it was for you, but I do think I understand.
So, Jastis said, running a hand through his hair. That fancy suit and haircut didn't save you, eh?
Take your kolos and go, Jastis.
That sounded like a threat, Elend, Jastis said.
You aren't king. You don't have an army. And I don't see your Mistborn around. What grounds do you have for threats?
They're kolos, Elend said.
Do you really want them getting into the city? It's your home, Jastis, or it was once. There are thousands of people inside.
I can control my army, Jastis said.
No, I doubt you can, Elend said.
What happened, Jastis? Did they decide they needed a king? They decided that's the way that humans did it, so they should do it too? What is it that they carry in those pouches?
Jastis didn't answer. Elend sighed. What happens when one of them just snaps and attacks you?
Jastis shook his head.
I'm sorry, Elend, he said quietly. I can't let Straff get that atium.
And my people? Jastis paused only briefly, then lowered his eyes and motioned to the guards. One laid a hand on Ellen's shoulder. Ellen's reaction surprised even himself. He slammed his elbow up into the man's face, shattering his nose, then took the other man down with a kick to the leg. Before Jastis could do more than cry out, Ellen jumped forward. Ellen ripped an obsidian knife, given to him by Vin, from his boot and caught Jastis by the shoulder. Elend slammed the whimpering man around, pushing him backward onto the desk and, barely thinking to consider his actions, rammed the knife into his old friend's shoulder. Jastis emitted a loud, pathetic scream.
If killing you would do anything useful, Jastis, Elend growled, I'd do it right now. But I don't know how you control these things, and I don't want to set them loose.
Soldiers piled into the room. Elend didn't look up. He slapped Jastis, stopping his cries of pain.
You listen, Elend said. I don't care if you've been hurt. I don't care if you don't believe in the philosophies anymore. And I don't really care if you get yourself killed playing politics with Straff and Set. But I do care if you threaten my people. I want you to march your army out of my dominance, go attack Straff's homeland or maybe Set's. They're both undefended. I promise I won't let your enemies get the atium. And, as a friend, I'll give you a bit of counsel. Think about that wound in your arm for a little while, Jastis. I was your best friend and I nearly killed you. What the hell are you doing sitting in the middle of an entire army of deranged kolos?
Soldiers surrounded him. Elend stood, ripping the knife from Jastis' body and spinning the man around, pressing the weapon against his throat. The guards froze.
I'm leaving, Elend said, pushing the confused Jastis ahead of him, moving out of the tent.
He noticed, with some concern, that there were barely a dozen human guards. Sacet had counted more. Where had Jastis lost them? There was no sign of Ellen's horse, so he kept a wary eye on the soldiers, pulling Jastis toward the invisible line between the human camp and the Kolos one. Elland turned as he reached the perimeter, then pushed Jastis back toward his men. They caught him, one pulling out a bandage for the arm. Others made moves as if to chase Elland, but they paused, hesitant. Elland had crossed the line into the Kolos camp. He stood quietly, watching the pathetic group of young soldiers, Jastis at their center. Even as they ministered to him, Elland could see the look in Jastis' eyes. Hatred. He wouldn't retreat. The man Elland had known was dead, replaced by this product of a new world that didn't kindly regard philosophers and idealists. Elland turned away, walking among the Kolos. A group of them quickly approached. The same one as before? He couldn't tell for certain. "Take me out," Elland commanded, meeting the eyes of the largest Kolos in the team. Either Elland seemed more commanding now, or this Kolos was more easily cowed, for there was no argument. The creature simply nodded and began to shuffle out of the camp, his team surrounding Elland. This trip was a waste, Elland thought with frustration. All I did was antagonize Jastis. I risked my life for nothing. If only I could find out what was in those pouches. He eyed the group of Kolos around him. It was a typical group, ranging in size from 5 feet to 1 10-foot monstrosity. They walked along with slumped, unengaged postures. Elland still had his knife out. This is stupid, he thought. For some reason, that didn't stop him from choosing the smallest Kolos in the group, taking a deep breath, and attacking. The rest of the Kolos paused to watch. The creature Elland had chosen spun, but in the wrong direction. It turned to face its companion Kolos, the one nearest to it in size, as Elland tackled it, ramming the knife into its back. Even at 5 feet, with a small build, the Kolos was incredibly strong. It tossed Elland off, bellowing in pain. Elland, however, managed to keep hold of his dagger. "Can't let it get out that sword," he thought, scrambling to his feet and ramming his knife into the creature's thigh. The Kolos dropped again, punching at Elland with one arm, fingers reaching for its sword with the other. Elland took the punch to the chest and fell back to the sooty ground. He groaned, gasping. The Kolos pulled out its sword, but had trouble standing. Both knife wounds bled stark red blood. The liquid seemed brighter, more reflective than that of a human, but that might have just been a contrast with the deep blue skin. The Kolos finally managed to gain its feet, and Elland realized his mistake. He'd let the adrenaline of his confrontation with Jastis, his frustration at his inability to stop the armies, drive him. He'd sparred a lot lately, but he was in no position to take on a Kolos. But it was far too late to worry about that now. Elland rolled out of the way as a thick, club-like sword smashed to the ground beside him. Instincts overrode terror, and he mostly managed to avoid the backswing. It took him a bit in the side, spraying a patch of blood across his once-white uniform, but he barely even felt the cut. Only one way to win a knife fight against a guy with a sword, Elland thought, gripping his knife. The thought, oddly, hadn't come from one of his trainers or even from Vin. He wasn't sure where it came from, but he trusted it. Close in tight as fast as possible and kill quickly. And Elland attacked. The Kolos swung as well. Elland could see the attack, but couldn't do anything about it. He could only throw himself forward, knife raised, teeth clenched. He rammed his knife into the Kolos's eye, barely managing to get inside the creature's reach. Even so, the hilt of the sword hit him in the stomach. Both dropped. Elland groaned quietly, slowly becoming aware of the hard, ash-packed earth and weeds eaten down to their roots. A fallen twig was scratching his cheek. Odd that he would notice that, considering the pain in his chest. He stumbled to his feet. The Kolos he'd attacked did not rise. Its companions stood, looking unconcerned, though their eyes were focused on him. They seemed to want something. "He ate my horse," Elland said, saying the first thing that came to his clouded mind. The group of Kolos nodded. Elland stumbled forward, wiping the ash from his cheek with a dazed hand as he knelt beside the dead creature. He ripped his knife out, then slid it back in his boot. Next he unfastened the pouches. This Koloss had two. Finally, not certain why, he grabbed the creature's large sword and rested it up on his shoulder. It was so weighty that he could barely carry it, and certainly wouldn't be able to swing it. How does a creature so small use something like this? The Koloss watched him work without comment. Then they led him out of the camp. Once they had retreated, Elland pulled open one of the pouches and looked inside. He shouldn't have been surprised by what he found inside. Jastes had decided to control his army the old-fashioned way. He was paying them.
The others call me mad. As I have said, that may be true.
43. Mist poured into the dark room, collapsing around Vin like a waterfall as she stood in the open balcony doorway. Elland was a motionless lump sleeping in his bed a short distance away.
"Apparently, mistress," Orsure had explained, "he went into the Koloss camp alone. You were asleep and none of us knew what he was doing. I don't think he managed to persuade the creatures not to attack. But he did come back with some very useful information."
Orsure sat on his haunches beside her. He had not asked why Vin had come to Ellen's rooms, nor why she stood quietly watching the former king in the night. She couldn't protect him. She tried so hard, but the impossibility of keeping even one person safe suddenly seemed so real, so tangible to her, that she felt sick. Elland had been right to go out. He was his own man, competent, kingly. What he had done would only put him in more danger, however. Fear had been a companion of hers for such a long time that she had grown accustomed to it, and it rarely caused a physical reaction in her. Yet watching him sleep quietly, she found her hands traitorously unsteady.